You're listening to Truth to You with Jono, and g'day wherever you may be around the world. It is good to have your company. It is time for Natural Medicine with naturopath Stephen Tamplin of Central West and naturopathic.com.au. Stephen, welcome back to the program.
And I'm glad to be back, and hello, listeners.
Hello, listeners. I'll tell you what, I put a call out to the listeners because I wanted their opinion, I wanted their questions, and they have responded because today's topic is one, when you suggested it to me, and it was your idea, I have to admit, Stephen, I was fearful, and I thought, you know what, why do I feel like it doesn't matter what I'm going to say or how I say it, I'm going to be in trouble? So
that's what happens with women's hormones sometimes.
And it was you who said that. Now
it was me who said that.
I put it out to what we're going to be talking about, dear listeners, is women's hormones, okay? Now, I did put it out to Facebook, to the listeners there, and I said, look, please, any questions that you have, send them in. And we've certainly got a response. You're going to be touching on some of those, Stephen. Where would you like to begin?
Well, I guess we can start just by stating that men and women all produce hormones, and hormones are the secretions of the endocrine glands. Now, endocrine glands are there to regulate the body's functions. Mm-hmm. And so you go to an endocrinologist when you've got problems with your thyroid, when you've got problems with your pituitary gland, when you've got problems with your pancreas. These are all endocrine functions. And the hormonal part that we're interested in today is to do with the balancing of usually the axis between the hypothalamus and pituitary gland and the ovaries or the testicles. And the adrenal glands are a very important part. Mm-hmm. And men and women all produce progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, aldosterone as their main gender hormone drivers. Mm-hmm. And in men, of course, you've got higher levels of some, and in women, you've got higher levels of other. But we all produce those four, and they need to be regulated to keep good, healthy outcomes for us.
Sure.
Now, with women in particular, their hormones are much more erratic in the way they perform because they're cycling on a monthly basis during their fertile time. Mm-hmm. And in men, our hormones, basically they're once in place, they're mostly in place because we don't have that monthly cycle, not even an annual cycle. Whereas women, they have this extreme variation from, you know, 1 week to another week. And that's because of the functions of the hormones preparing them for conception and pregnancy and so on, then that's sure. not used, and so the hormones are basically washed out. And they have very significant impact on women's health in general terms. Mm-hmm. Nutrition has got a large part to play in the way hormones are regulated. So also do your activity and energy levels. And overall, women's hormones, I think, are not even well understood by women.
So I can assure you that they're not well understood by men, let alone women, generally speaking. Most men will tell you, I don't know what's going on. But what you're telling me is that they do tend to go from one extreme to another to some degree because of their monthly cycle. But it's not just their monthly cycle. We're also talking about during the time of pregnancy, there's different hormones going on there. There's also different hormones going on in menopause as well. And they really seems to be having more challenges in that regard than men, because what you're saying is that men are generally on more of an even playing field in comparison. And so the question does become, can it be managed in such a way to reduce the extremes? Can it be managed with activity, exercise, and diet? And I guess that's what we're going to talk about, right?
That's right. And yes, they can be. That's the good news, that these things are simply managed. They're not complex issues. They can be made to appear complex. But in simple terms, at the time of birth, a woman is born with a estrogen dominance. Mm-hmm. And estrogen stops a woman, a female, a young lady baby, up to puberty from issues of cycling, progesterone overloads and things of that sort associated with bringing on puberty too early until the body is ready to go through a reproductive phase. Mm-hmm. So estrogen is the dominant hormone in the early stages, and that gives the woman then her gender identity. So that causes the baby to develop as a young girl into a woman, mm-hmm. and for a boy, they then produce the testosterone, and the women start to produce the progesterone at their puberty time. And the thing about the progesterone is that it is released mostly by the ovaries in the early stage, and the pituitary gland is a gland that sits up in the front of the head, and come ovulation time, that kicks in and starts secreting and causing the brain to secrete these hormone fluids. Now, for the first couple of weeks of the woman's cycle time, from that first 2 weeks of their month, they're not producing progesterone. They're running on estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
At ovulation, when the egg is released, then there is a release from the bed of the egg where the egg was.
Yes,
it's releasing a small amount of progesterone, and that spikes up quite high for the next 3 or 4 days on the off chance that there'll be a conception that will then be managed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the estrogen is no longer dominant. So in the first couple of weeks of the cycle, estrogen's dominant, then progesterone suddenly surges at the release of the egg, and the egg is ready to be fertilized. And if it is fertilized, it goes through to the uterus where it is implanted, and then the placenta keeps producing the ongoing progesterones. If the egg is not fertilized, then the progesterone fades off again, diminishes,
mm-hmm.
estrogen becomes dominant, and then there is the shedding of the uterine lining. The menstruation occurs.
Sure.
Now, if we go through the symptoms of what happens at the ovulatory phase, the pituitary causes the brain to secrete extra fluids. Now, a lot of women, they come and see me about these migraines, and they say, I really feel like tearing my eyes out because it's just in behind and it's really hurting.
Oh, wow.
And this is where the pituitary sits. And in its doing of its job, it becomes mildly swollen, so that creates extra pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ventricles of the brain, they secrete the fluids, which then bathe the brain and increase fluids. So women get this starting point in the front of the head, then they get this generalized head pain. And because those fluids drain down the spinal column, down through the spinal cord, they get mm-hmm. this tight neck where the fluid is pushing through the foramen magnum, the hole at the back of the skull, and congesting the spinal cord. And that's where women then start to complain about the low back pain.
Ah.
At the end of the spinal column, there is a thing called the cauda equina. It's a system of very fine hair-like drains that wrap around the abdominal area and down into the legs. And these cauda equina then draw these spinal fluids out, which is why some women then become very bloated and get heavy legs.
Mm-hmm.
Because the system is the pituitary is secreting these fluids, and the message is sent to the ovaries in that fluid. And so this causes those symptoms of discomfort because there's too much fluid being produced. There's not enough drainage capacity. And so you get this early migraine, then the headache, then the tight neck, the full back, the bloated tummy, the heavy legs over a period of a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite disabling for some women who also get a lot of stomach cramping and other discomforts. Now, at puberty, young girls are also developing breast tissue, they're developing their uterine tissue, they're going through a lot of changes, and they're getting a lot of pimpling. Now, when progesterone is to be produced, the body needs an adequate supply of zinc. Zinc and progesterone are linked, and so is copper to estrogen. So when you get copper dominance or estrogen dominance, copper being a metal, mm-hmm. creates essentially a temporary heavy metal poisoning, for want of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes this mental state discomfort. To bring the zinc load into play is what you need to regulate your progesterone. So if your zinc and copper levels are wrong, your progesterone and estrogen levels are going to be out of whack. So what happens is to produce progesterone, you need zinc. Your zinc level rises according to your progesterone level. Then as your zinc level falls according to your progesterone level falls, so skin health changes and copper comes in, and when copper comes in premenstrually, that's the pimpling because there's not enough zinc to keep the skin healthy.
Really? Okay.
So zinc supplementation is a good way to help with the second part of your month. But with young puberty girls, I use a herb called blessed thistle because it's a very gentle little tweaker of the developing system. And the herb actually helps to turn little girls into developing girls properly.
Uh-huh.
And it's rich in zinc. It's got a lot of other cofactors that are very useful. With girls who, as they get a bit older, they are getting a need for more support. And so to give them a more even second half of the month when they become estrogen dominant due to the declining progesterone due to non-fertility or non-conception, then I use a herb called wild yam, or as a Mexican herb, it's Dioscorea villosa. And that herb I just use from day 12 or 13, because the fertile peak time for a woman is between day roughly 13 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
Conception will only occur usually in that time.
Sure.
So if they haven't conceived, then they're going to get this rapid decline in progesterone, which will lead them to this premenstrual syndrome, as is discussed. And I don't like the word syndrome. I've told you about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a very precise measure of a collapsing progesterone, a collapsing zinc load, and the other things becoming too dominant. And when estrogen becomes dominant in that later part of the month, estrogen increases body salinity, so the body holds fluid to dilute that salinity, for want of a better way of saying it.
Sure.
And the estrogen dominance creates other discomforts. So the wild yam, which I found to be an absolutely brilliant little herb, helps to slow down the rapid decline in progesterone, suppresses the high surge of estrogen, and then on day one of their flow, they stop the wild yam until day 12 or 13 again. So using one herb just for half the second half of their month makes them have a very nice month. And a lot of husbands tell me that wild yam has retained their relationship.
Truly.
Because what it does is it puts women back on that even keel, which is where they want to be. But due to physiological changes where there's nutrient inefficiencies of zinc and copper relationship, the neuroendocrine balance gets thrown out of whack. Now, in pregnancy, at ovulation, there's conception, the progesterone is then continued at a much higher level. And for the first 13 weeks, if the progesterone level isn't maintained at a sufficiently high level, then miscarriage will occur. Because progesterone is the one that helps to get the pregnancy on the way and to retain the pregnancy. And as the placenta is growing, it's secreting more progesterone. But there can be situations where there's an inadequate amount of progesterone produced. And so there are other reasons why miscarriages can occur, but in most cases, the decline in progesterone in that first 13 weeks. And so where a woman gets pregnant, I would then use wild yam for the first 13 weeks of the pregnancy to maintain an adequate level of progesterone to support the pregnancy. After that, you don't need it. You can leave it alone. But what will also happen is that after a woman has had her baby, it's essentially the same hormonal relationship as what happens in the ordinary unfertile month. Because what happens there is the woman's got this high level of progesterone for the first part. It fades off in the last 3 months. Estrogen becomes more higher in the last 3 months, among other hormones, and that's when they have the baby, which is glorified period. Okay?
Sure.
So what ultimately happens is there's low progesterone, and that then leads into this postnatal depression, the moody blue.
Right.
Where a person has this baby and then their hormones are so out of whack, it's the same as having a post-menstrual syndrome where the progesterone is too low, other hormones are too high, the whole thing's out of whack. And so after a baby has been born, if a woman does experience a flat mood or a dissociation, then I would always use wild yam again, because that will restate the progesterone level so that if they become pregnant again, they don't lose it. And
I'm highlighting wild yam.
And it can be used at any stage of the reproductive life for women, ideally in the last 2 weeks of a cycle. And that would just keep it. But you don't take it during your cycle because it actually increases your flow.
And you so don't let me just get this straight in my mind, because this is a question from Elizabeth. She wrote in and she said, I've lost many babies because my body only makes a few days' worth of progesterone each month, and I would really like to know what Stephen has to say about it, is if there's something natural that can be done, because nothing medical has ever worked. So are you saying that taking wild yam...
Zinc and wild yam.
Okay. All right. That's going to help.
That's going to give you a higher degree of certainty that you'll have an adequate progesterone level.
Okay.
Now, there's other things that come into play. And there we talk about cholesterol, because cholesterol is converted in the adrenal glands. It produces a thing called pregnenolone, which converts into a thing called DHA. Now, what happens is the DHA is then converted to produce adrenaline. And when you're not needing too much of adrenaline, it'll produce cortisol. Cortisol is then the precursor to the production of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and aldosterone. So if you've got a low cholesterol level, you're going to have problems producing the correct adrenal support for your hormonal development.
Now, when you say a low cholesterol level, I think last time that you and I spoke about cholesterol, you were saying that it is regarded low once it drops below 4. Is that correct, or do I remember that?
That's right. A woman wanting to become pregnant, I'd like to see the cholesterol up around 4.5 to 5,
mm-hmm.
because that'll give us an adequate level of adrenal support for the hormonal management.
Okay.
As well as if they're going to have seeking a pregnancy, a woman should start preparing herself a couple of months ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women feel real good during pregnancy simply because pregnancy is a great way to detoxify a woman.
Mm-hmm.
All the rubbish goes across the placenta and not all of it comes back. And sometimes women are born with sickly babies because they've passed on stuff that they should have got rid of prior to pregnancy.
Right,
I'm not saying that's in all cases, but what I am saying is that a woman quite often feels very healthy when she's pregnant because the hormones are feeling good, lots of progesterone, that's mm-hmm. the happy hormone, but also because in the placenta is acting as a filter.
Mm-hmm. Well, now this is another question, and this is a little bit besides the point, but I heard recently, for example, that during pregnancy, heavy metals such as lead, for example, will pass from the mother to the baby.
That's right.
And therefore, it is obviously a good idea if you're planning to become pregnant that some serious detox, I suppose, would be well in order before conception. Is that fair?
That's what I said, you know, that women need to start preparing themselves to do a good cleanup,
mm-hmm.
you know, well prior to getting pregnant.
Okay.
There's no point just living your ordinary daily life, cigarettes, alcohol, whatever else that people are doing, some medications needed to be stopped, but then suddenly find you're pregnant and all that rubbish is just going to pass through.
Mm.
It's in the system. It needs to be got out and cleaned up.
Sure.
It's like when you're having guests come for tea, you clean the house first, don't you?
Sure.
You know, you tidy up.
Very
so
good
you
point.
Need to tidy up for the guest room for the baby.
Makes perfect sense. And so now Tahila, she writes, differences between a woman's hormones when pregnant and not. She said, I had a doctor tell me that the two are as different in hormonal makeup as a man is from a woman. Do you think that's fair?
I think it's a fair comment. Because you've got a whole lot of additional hormonal things happening during pregnancy and, you know, preparing for milk flow, mm-hmm. preparing for uterine growth and preparing for alteration of the pelvic muscles and all these things. These are all influenced by a wide range of hormonal things.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a woman who's become pregnant, you know, one of the first things that's released is the human chorionic hormone.
Mm-hmm.
HCG. And that particular hormone is just released as a quick surge in the early stages. That's what the test is for pregnancy, to measure the level of HCG. Now, HCG's testing is also done in males for different reasons, even though we're not pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
It's used as a marker for prostate cancer and other forms of issues.
Sure.
If a man is producing that hormone, then there's problems. But for a woman, when she's in the early stages of pregnancy, she needs to produce plenty of this particular hormone. That rises, and then it falls off fairly quickly. But then the pregnancy's in place, and other hormones will come on. And then at the end of the pregnancy, hormones are changing from instead of producing fetal growth, they're preparing maternal preparation.
Right, right. And so it's a whole other ballgame, I suppose. Now, coming back to what you said about the pressure behind the eyes and that headache or migraine, can I just get you to elaborate a little bit there? Because that was a question from Jeannie and Michelle seeking help in regards to headaches and migraines. Are you suggesting again that wild yam will help in regards to that pressure behind the eyes?
Yeah, I've had so many women come to my clinic over the years I've been doing this. What is it now? 30-odd years of it. And using the wild yam will significantly minimize the cerebral pressure
mm-hmm.
due to ovulatory discomfort. Now, if the migraine is due to other reasons, whether it be cerebrovascular or other causes, that's another issue. But if it's only associated with hormonal cycling, the first option is to use the wild yam.
Right. Excellent.
And also, I always measure the cholesterol level, because if you're not producing the adrenal support to support the hormonal growths anyway, mm-hmm. or the hormonal adjustments, then you've got problems.
Now, before I move on to that, Peggy, g'day to Peggy. She wrote, is there any help available for a woman who has undergone a mastectomy? And chemo, which brought on early changes in life, And then she talks about the hot flashes. Now, this was the most popular response to the question that I put out in Facebook. Most people wrote and said, what about the hot flashes? Can you describe them? I mean, men, how do we understand hot flashes?
How do we understand them? I guess we never will as fellas, because mm-hmm. it's something that's a very, I suppose, embarrassing in some ways, disabling in others, but a lot of differences in the degree of this hot flashing that women go through associated with hormonal change. The mechanism by which the hormonal change is not clearly understood medically. Endocrinologists are still trying to explore all these things because some women have a terrible time come menopause or change of life and some don't. Mm. Some women just breeze through another day, another dolly, and it's all fine. Some women, they go on for years and years. And I had one lady who came in. She was just in her early 40s. She was going through a very early menopausal change, and she was having to take a spare change of clothes to work with her every day because she knew that she would be having such a hot flush and hot sweating and all the discomforts that she would just saturate herself a couple of times a day.
Well, just in breaking out in a sweat?
Breaking out in sweats.
My goodness, and she that's was incredible. Having,
as the day went on, her sweats became more intense, and usually about after lunch, she would need to change a full change of clothes.
Sure.
And
Peggy gives the example here of hot flashes that were almost unbearable, 100 plus a day oncologists usually won't give hormone replacement, and all the prescriptions were ineffective. So, what can be done?
Okay, we're talking about estrogen. It's the change in estrogen because progesterone is only produced for the reproductive time of life,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have it as a woman, except what you produce adrenally. Also, your ovaries are no longer secreting the estrogen base,
mm-hmm.
but you are still producing estrogen adrenally. But the precursor to estrogen is testosterone. And so what women need who are having extreme flashing is a testosterone support, not an estrogen therapy. Estrogen therapy, hormone replacement therapy, has been shown to cause cancer, strokes, all sorts of things. Leave it alone. Stay away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got three forms of estrogen in a woman, E1, E2, E3. And these are produced in different ways in the body. E1 and E2, they are the reproductive sort of stuff, the development stuff. But E3 is the stuff that is going to be with you long term.
Mm-hmm.
And after menopause, you rely on different levels of estrogen, different types of estrogen to do different things. But the key to maintaining a menopausal comfort
mm-hmm.
is maintaining the precursor to the production of estrogen.
Hmm.
Because with women, the argument is that it's the non-production of estrogen that causes the loss of calcium and the osteoporosis and all that sort of gear.
Sure.
And that's been found to be not true. When I have had women who've had extremely bad hot flushes, I've used testosterone-stimulating hormones and vitamin D in parallel with very good effect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other herbs that can be useful, things like sage. Sage is a very good herb in the menopausal time. It helps to just regulate in the early stage. It's an estrogenic herb, but it's very low in testosterone support. So at some stage, people say, look, I've been using the sage as a tea or as a capsule or whatever for a while, and it doesn't seem to be working anymore. And that's because it's only doing one part of the equation. And so herbs like tribulus are a very good herb, and I start women in low dose with tribulus, and sometimes I've had to go up to 20,000 milligrams a day. You know, a low dose could be 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting off with a tribulus helps to put the estrogen support in, but you've got to have vitamin D because vitamin D works with your cholesterol as a sterol to actually do a lot of this conversionary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you've got to use tribulus, which is supposedly a male aphrodisiac, male stimulant, male stamina endurance promoter, with the women to help with their estrogen balancing.
Okay.
So in respect of women's hormones, one of the things that, as I said before, is the conversion of cholesterol to DHEA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of women around their cycle, around their change of lifetime, become very emotional, very anxious, very distressed easily, tearful,
mm-hmm.
and all that sort of gear.
Sure.
That is when there is an insufficiency of DHEA. DHEA is the end product of cholesterol conversion prior to it being made into other things. And if you don't have an adequate level of DHEA, you will trend to emotional imbalances and anxieties along the way. And I've had great results where we've used DHEA with a vitamin B complex just to support the anxiety management factors that the body needs. Vitamin B6 is in itself is a very, very good herb used for the secretion of the manufacture of serotonin and the happy hormones.
Yes.
And when
it's good for lowering the stress level. It's also good for healthy sleep, right, as well.
Healthy sleep and fluid retention. People who retain fluid, B6, you know, it's essential for the thyroid function. It works with selenium to produce serotonin and other things.
Nice.
And so when it comes to this emotional uncertainty, which affects relationships, you know, you go home at the end of the day, you don't realize your wife's at the end of the month, and at the end of the day, you know, you'd rather go someplace else.
Right.
this is a fact of life that, you know, we can joke about, but this is what happens, you know. They don't mean to be snappy Tom at you. You're just the person who's there. And the disturbance in the effector hormones, the effector to do with the emotions and the mood, from the disturbance of B6, DHEA, and so on and so forth. And when you get a clear understanding of the need to take the four hormones into account and the precursors of testosterone for estrogen, DHEA for all the gender regulators, then life gets back onto a track, supported by appropriate levels of zinc and vitamin C and a good diet, which includes some of your essential fatty acids, your fish oils, your long chain fatties, which come from your linseed or flax and other things of that sort, can be useful.
Okay. Now, another question here, Tricia. She asks, can fasting or cleansing help with hormone imbalances?
It's not probably the way that I would generally recommend, but bearing in mind that we're all overfed and undernourished, and often what we eat, we store some of the things we don't need, it is useful in everybody's case to have an occasional lean time, tucker-wise. So we may need to regulate our diet to allow our body to get back in regulation. When the body is looking for hormonal regulation, it's looking to convert nutrients into appropriate forms. If we're eating well, that is eating the things that are appropriate to our gender, to our blood group, and so on, we usually don't have too many worries. But it's the quantity of food that becomes a greater concern. When we're overfed, what we have is stored as fat. And our vitamin D, A, E, and K are fat-soluble vitamins. And so that's where we find them, that's where they're stored. And the body needs to metabolize those. Now, vitamin A has a close affinity with progesterone. Vitamin E has a closer affinity with estrogen. And so using diet and fasting as a regulator, I guess just helps to get rid of some of the excesses that the body doesn't need, and it may have some benefits with hormonal regulation, but I wouldn't say that in every case it's the ideal way to go.
Okay.
The proper way is to actually get a salivary screen of your hormonal state, and when you do a salivary screen, what that means is you put a little swab inside your mouth and you take a swab on day 7, 14, and 21 of your month, and you then have that sampling assessed at a pathology laboratory, where they'll measure your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, cortisol, and DHEAS. And then you get back a profile as to how you're running through the month, and then you get a chance to regulate where you're at. In line with that, hair tissue mineral analysis is always useful because that actually shows what minerals you may be toxic in, what minerals you may be insufficient in, and it does a very good job of showing your zinc, copper, sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium ratios. And it's not just the level of zinc, it's the ratio of zinc to copper. Not just the level of sodium, but it's the ratio of sodium to potassium and so on that's important.
Okay.
And they help to regulate your endocrine system and keep things sweet.
Now, speaking of regulating, Ricardo asked about the use of iodine. He said, what about natural hormone replacement, which you've been talking about, but the use of iodine for hormone regulation? What's your thoughts there?
Iodine is a necessary mineral for thyroid health. And when the body is insufficiently managed with iodine, it alters hemoglobin production. And so people who have got a low thyroid function also trend to forms of anemia. And we actually see this in live blood analysis. We can actually see hollowed out red blood cells more than a fully filled red blood cell because the hemoglobin is not adequately provided. Mm-hmm. That means there's low levels of oxygenation, so the body becomes sluggish and people tend to weight gain during low thyroid function. Now, iodine is also very important with folic acid during pregnancy to help to have a good, healthy management of the fetal development. Mm-hmm. Very important for its neural functions, very important for its tissue growth, folic acid being essential for the conversion of into DNA. But with another aspect of thyroid, we look at the fact that if one endocrine gland is not working right, then all the others are under additional load. Mm-hmm. And their role is to try to sort themselves out rather than sort out a pregnancy, rather than sort out other hormones. They try to get each other right, but what happens is one thing leads into a spiral dive elsewhere. And with excessively low thyroid function, we tend to see estrogen dominance, and so it goes on. Now, the other thing that's very important during pregnancy, and a recent study that was done in pediatric research, was the fact that babies with a slow speech development, slow motor skills, slow cognitive developments, are usually due to a maternal deficiency of vitamin D. And when we see people who are pregnant and they're inside all day working in offices, they're not getting their adequate levels of vitamin D. Mm-hmm. So you can end up then with babies that are much slower in their intellectual and motor skill development.
Sure.
So when one gland is not treated right, when one gland is not nourished, other things go wrong. Mm-hmm. And so iodine, there's a preparation here put out by one company that's what they call I-folate. It's an iodine folic acid mix. Uh-huh. And that's rather than just taking a folic acid during pregnancy, because folic acid is quite useful in the prevention of spina bifida. Now, spina bifida is a neural tube defect in the spinal column, and it's got several stages of progression. But folic acid is also necessary for the healthy. As I said before, in the DNA, folic acid and B12 are very important there. And if you don't have the right levels of those in your tissues, then other tissue in the glands that has to be replaced, because all tissue is being replaced all the time. Cells are breaking down, cells are being replaced. We need adequate levels of the right nutrients to help those to be reproduced effectively mm-hmm. in all the glands.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. And so there's obviously benefit there. A couple last questions from the listeners, and again, this is from Peggy, and I think we've addressed most of this. You've addressed in regards to hot flashes, and that seems to be the dominant question that people want to get on top of. Are there foods that will help hot flashes and foods that will make them worse? And you did touch on that. And then the question, do they ever stop? Do they stop?
They do stop.
They do eventually stop.
Okay. They do eventually stop when appropriately managed early enough.
Okay.
I've got one lady who unfortunately has only just started coming to see me because she was referred to me by one of her friends. But this lady's been having hot flushes now for 15 years. Yeah, and she's not a young lady anymore. She's in her 60s. And, I mean, I'm 60 next year, so it's not as if she's old either. But, you know, she's been having this problem for a long time. Mm-hmm. And appropriately managed, you know, a lot of women will have some short-term discomforts, but it shouldn't go on, you know, for years and years and years. And there's simply a matter of having someone not just say, oh, well, it's a time of life, you've got to expect some discomforts, but to say, okay, we've got to go back to the cause. I harp on this all the time. We've got to get back to the cause. Mm-hmm. Estrogen requires testosterone. They both need DHEA. They both need adequate cholesterol. They need to be managed in the appropriate way. Certain foods, well, your zinc-rich foods, you know, your fishes, your seafoods, they're mm-hmm. good for you. Your essential fatty acids, your things that support your vitamin D, vitamin A, antioxidants, A, C, and E with selenium, very important because they're all essential to keep your whole endocrine system running sweetly.
Sure.
And so when you look at foods, I tend to say to people in this situation, avoid all the white refined foods.
Uh-huh. So we're talking the white flour, the white sugar. We're talking the
flour, especially
rice,
all that refined white potato. Flour would have to be the worst thing for women's hormones.
Yes,
white bread will kill you. It's as simple as that, because in what happens is it's indigestible cellulose, it's depleted of nutrients, and the flour is ground from wheat or whatever it may be, and it's a nice buff, you know, sort of fawny sort of colour. But people like to see nice white clean sheets on beds. They like to see nice white flour in the jar. So to bleach it, they will use various chemicals to bleach it. Some of those chemicals will be shown to be on the cancer register, but the one that's most commonly used is a thing called bromide. Now, bromide is a herb that displaces iodine. It is a mineral that displaces iodine uptake. And so white bread will actually ultimately lead to thyroid dysfunction.
Interesting.
So what you need to do is anything white, leave it alone. All the white breads, all the refined flours, all the white sugars. You can use raw sugar. You can use other things to sweeten if need be. You wouldn't use any of the artificial things with aspartame, but you may choose to use something like stevia, xylitol. They're of a nutrient sort of sweetener. Then you leave alone things like your white potatoes. You leave alone your cauliflower. You leave alone your refined polished rices and things of that sort, and go to the whole food using a whole meal bread or a whole grain bread, using the sweet potato, using the broccoli, because those cruciferous vegetables have got great effect at cleaning your liver. And so these, if you look at something that's white and say, if I leave nothing else alone but all the white foods, and that includes milk, no matter what flavouring you might put in it. I had one client who I said, leave milk alone because that's white. She said, well, what if I put chocolate topping in it? Okay? That's not what I mean, okay? Brown milk is not the same. It's still just milk. But if you go back to those products and you leave everything white alone, certainly leave milk alone, leave all your sugars alone, you'll do a lot better for yourself in every way, because when you have too much sugar, that disturbs your insulin sensitivity. It affects your whole metabolic regulation. And when you leave those things alone, you're going to get the foods that have got better nutrition in them.
Now, let me just ask you, because you mentioned milk. Do you mention milk as in store-bought milk, processed, refined milk? Is that where you're coming from? Because what about raw milk?
Well, raw milk is unhomogenized, unpasteurized. And the homogenization process, let's put it this way. When you get the butterfat or the cream of milk sitting on top of the milk in the vat, you have a very dense, large molecule of butterfat. During the homogenization process, they are smashed into millions and millions of little pieces, and so they don't reconstitute as a large molecule. They are just micro dots that can then be absorbed in the smaller stage through the intestinal absorption pathways, and then they cause problems. Because the fats, molecules in proper cream, are too big for absorption, okay? So when you take raw milk, if it's from the A1 variety, it's going to cause you nothing but problems, because A1 milk has the histidine molecule, which is inflammatory. A2 milk, which is from the older English breeds, and from sheep and goats and from women, have a proline molecule, which is not going to cause you the same degree of problem.
There it is,
But, yes, in respect of some foods, we can leave them alone. But if you need to use them, you have them as minimally as possible.
And I mean, so we're applying that rule.
I mash my carrot and sweet potato together, I'll use a little dob of butter. Okay, which is made from cream. Okay. And that suits me fine. But I find that if I've been out somewhere and they've used milk to do the mash, it's a very watery mash. You know, so I just find that using the whole of the food, the colour of food, makes a plate look better anyway.
A wide variety of colour on your plate. As opposed to just white or brown that we so often see in on people's dinner plates these days. And so to minimise the white in your diet. Now, here's a couple of... The final comments that I got, Stephen, are from a couple of guys. Number one, Ken. G'day to Ken. He says, as a married guy, I ain't touching that with a 30-foot pole. So this can be one of those topics that can get you into trouble
I'm
either way.
I'm told I'm either brave or stupid at certain times.
G'day to Dave. He wrote, is there a natural sedative I could ingest to help me endure these hormonal disturbances? Well... Hopefully.
Well, I would suggest that I'm sure he's a deeply caring and loving person to his partner.
He is.
And if he wants to do something real nice for her, go and buy some wild jam for her.
There it is. So something she can ingest to help her and therefore help him. So wild yam.
And both can enjoy a glass of red together.
Nice.
Don't forget about that.
All right. I'm highlighting that one as well. So we've got blessed thistle you mentioned. We've got wild yam and a glass of red. It's fun for everybody. There we go.
The aim of the game is not to wash the tablets, the supplements down with the red.
No.
Have the supplements with food and have the red as a separate enjoyment.
I'm liking that. Look, I would be interested in, and thank you to the listeners for writing in with the questions and the comments. Would be interested in more comments or questions in the comments section on the website, truthtoyou.org. That's truth number two, letteryou.org. Is there anything else, Stephen, that you want to throw into the mix before we say goodbye?
No, I think I've got myself into enough trouble now.
Thank you, Stephen Tamplin. And by the way, dear listeners, the website, he's got a new website, and the address is www.centralwestnaturopathic.com.au. www.centralwestnaturopathic.com.au. I will be putting a link on the website. And until next time, dear listeners, remember, it's never too late to make positive changes.
Without change, there could be no change. And it's a matter of accepting the fact that when change is necessary.
There it is. Wild yam, everybody. Thank you, Stephen.
You're welcome.
Here we are.
Thank you, bye.